One of the great questions about meaning for human beings has always been life and death. And what do they mean? Where is the meaning in life? Where is the meaning in death? Or is there any meaning there? Or is just the meaninglessness of death the point? And the scriptures offer various comments on that, you might say. But the strain of thought that's in our readings today is that God is not the author of death. That's what the Book of Wisdom says, that God is just as uncomfortable with death as we are, that God did not create us for just a short span of years, but created us for eternity. If we are created in God's image, then there must be something immortal in our genetic pool, because we have divine DNA running through our veins. And yet, because of the envy of the devil, because of sin, death enters into the world. And so there's tragedy and loss and grief and suffering and all these kinds of things as a result of human sin. So we find ourselves in the human condition, which is feeling immortal, feeling like there's some kind of destiny for us beyond this life, and yet we can't grab it. We can't achieve it on our own. It's somehow we have to let go and allow God to give it to us as a gift. It's not something that we can attain on our own. And so we have to go through various journeys on the way to some kind of dying, giving up, letting go, and allowing God to take absolute control of us. And so we have a couple of stories here in the gospel. One about a girl who's 12 years old, who's dying very suddenly. And it can even happen today, but in those days, it was very common for children to get a cold or something and die within a few days. I mean, tragic loss of children was a commonplace in those days. And so that's what's happened in this situation. And the father, desperate, comes looking for Jesus and begs him to come and lay his hand on the girl and save her life. And in the middle of that story, there's another story that Mark tells about a woman who's been suffering from hemorrhages for 12 years. So she's an older person, and she's dying very slowly. And both of those kinds of death, we know both of those kinds of deaths. The sudden death that gives us no warning, and it's just immediate tragic loss, and then there's the slow dying from old age or from cancer or from whatever. And so we have both kinds of death in these stories. And Jesus is presented in all the Gospels as God entering into our human condition and taking it on himself so that we can be freed to take on his divine nature. As St. Paul says in the second reading, he took on our poverty so that we could take on his richness. It's this exchange of divine and human natures that is all at one in Jesus, and he is inviting us, without losing our humanity, to enter into his divine nature so that what was true in Christ Jesus is also potentially true in you and me, that we can be fully human and fully divine at the same time. And that makes us immortal, indestructible, infinite, along with God. But we have to pass through the veil of death before that can happen. And so Jesus takes on our poverty. He takes on our human condition and walks the journey of suffering and death with us. And he exchanges his life for ours. And there are various stories in the gospel where Jesus exchanges his life for someone else's. And the overarching theme in the gospels is that Jesus is on his way to Jerusalem to die. And on the way, he meets various people and raises them to life. In other words, he's exchanging. So In the case of the woman, she comes up and touches his cloak, and he immediately feels power going out of him. The divine life is being sucked out of him and going into her. But he's okay with that. He feels that, he knows that it's happened, but he wants a more real encounter. So he says, "Who touched me?" And they say, "Well, my gosh, everybody's touching you. There's a big crowd here. They're pressing in all around you." No, no, no. He wants to know who it was in whom the power went out of him. And so she comes before him and confesses the whole story. And then he says, "Woman, your faith has cured you." When she touched his garment, she didn't have any faith. She was just desperate after all these years. She would have done anything. It was like magic. If I just touch his clothes, you know. But then in the exchange with him, face to face, eye to eye, she comes to fullness of faith, and then he says, "Your faith has cured you." And then he goes to the little girl, and there's all kinds of despair and hopelessness surrounding this, grief, lamentation, and wailing among the family members and the neighborhood. And Jesus says, "What are you wailing about? The child isn't dead. She's just asleep." And then they ridicule him. So there are two things being expressed there. One is hopelessness. They've given up. The child's dead. Get over it. Let's move on. And the other is cynicism. You know, the inability to believe that there could be something positive that would come out of this. And so we just make fun of it because that's all we know what to do. And Jesus dismisses both of those attitudes, and he goes in and he tells the little girl, "I say to you, arise." And the same word is used there for his rising from the dead. In other words, this is a resurrection. This is a premonition, a precursor of his own resurrection in this little girl. And then he says something strange. He tells them, "Give her something to eat." Well, why would he say that? Probably two reasons. One is, when Jesus appears in the upper room, he asks them if there's anything to eat. And they give him some fish, and he eats it in their presence, which is his way of saying, this is not a ghost you're seeing because ghosts don't eat. This is not a dead man you're seeing because dead people don't eat. Only living people eat. And so he wants to say to this family, she's not dead, she's alive. Watch her eat. Then you will know, because only the living eat. And the other reason he probably says this is because there are, in God's eyes, two basic rights that every human has. One is the right to life, the right to live forever. And the other is the right to eat, to have basic sustenance, to have basic nourishment, to have the necessities of life given to them. And Jesus has entered into a very unequal world where some people have way more than they need and other people are starving. And Jesus enters into that human situation and cries out for equality. And I think maybe that's one of the reasons that the church gives us that second reading from Paul's letter to the Corinthians together with these other two readings. You see, Paul, wherever he went, took up a collection for the poor in Jerusalem. Why was the church in Jerusalem so poor? Because there was persecution. One of the reasons that Paul and others went out to the Gentiles is because they were driven out of Jerusalem. They were so persecuted that many of them left the city. But the ones who remained, they couldn't get work because they were prejudiced against, and they became desperately poor. And so Paul and Barnabas and others, everywhere they went in the Gentile world, they took up collections and sent it back to the poor in Jerusalem. And so here in this reading, Paul is giving a rationale for why he's asking them to give. And he's saying, There are times when you have been in need and people came to help you. Now it's your turn to help some people who are in need of what you have. And he has this whole thing about there shouldn't be an excess here and a lack there. There should be some basic kind of equality. In other words, being pro-life is not enough. You have to be pro-poor too. You have to take care of the basic necessities of those who are in lack. And that's why the church has always been about the poor. That's why we have Catholic Charities. That's why we have Neighbor to Neighbor. That's why we have Shepherd's Crossing. You know, Thomas More was one of the parishes that founded Shepherd's Crossing 15 or 20 years ago, and we've been giving monthly to that ever since. It's a basic responsibility of this parish. And so you've been involved in that, and if you weren't aware of that, it's time for me to tell you that you've been more generous than you know. that some of the money that you give in the collection every week goes to the poor. Because this is one of the ways that we become Christ. He who took on our poverty so that we could become rich in him, so we take on the poverty of others so that they might become rich in us.